Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, everyone, and welcome to PWT Talk NXT. I'm Kelly Wells. I'm your host, and we're talking about NXT. Yeah, that's the show, not PWT. That's us for May 25th, 2021. A compact show. Not a lot of notes I had to take, but the trade-off is I'm slurring my speech. I don't know what's going on, folks, because I've not been drinking. So, I guess I'll just blame my excitement over TakeOver, right? Because that's happening soon, even though we don't have any matches for it. So, yeah, that's two and a half weeks away, and I guess we'll get on the horse towards that and on the hard sell starting next week. Do you want to email us? You can do that thing. pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Or you can call us 515-605-9345 and cue your question by hitting that £1 or pound one. It's one of those. So can't remember which because I don't have to call the show because I host it. Who else is here? Tom Staub, who are you?
I am at Tom Staub, and one thing you can do is also just, you know, put yourself on speakerphone and stick your phone in your pocket and accidentally call in like I've done once or twice before. I guess I'm not switching to talking about the main event. You know, I'll plug NXT 8 years back. We had a really fun conversation about Kung Fu movies and, you know, NXT also, Sami Zayn debuted, Enzo Amore debuted. Do you want to hear what Kelly thought of that? It's VIP for you.
Yeah, if you like Enzo, then let me save you some time. You're not going to like me. Nate, who are you?
I mean, I don't like you anyway, and I don't like Enzo either. So, hey, you know, I'm kidding. I do. I like you, Kelly, and I'm glad to be back with you here this week. I'm Nate Lindberg, and you can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I write the hits and misses for NXT, which I've actually already posted up tonight on pwtorch.com because I happen to have it finished before we went live. So if you want to know what I thought of the show before you listen to me here on the show, you can go to the website. And, hey, spoilers. So, yeah, that's me. And I also do the SmackDown Live report. All perspective live report, so check that out on Friday.
Well, it is spring cleaning season, and I regret to inform you of the untimely firing of Nate Lindberg. So the main event, Finn Balor versus Karrion Kross.
Future endeavored.
For the NXT Championship. Karrion Kross, the champ, going into this one, hasn't been in a lot of long matches. Certainly no epics like this one. This one went 22 minutes and 42 seconds. I don't know if it just seemed like we got to this match quickly somehow, this rematch, or what it was, but I just, it's not that it didn't kick into gear. I actually thought that this was pretty fiery for a cross match when much of what he's done between the bells has been overwhelming, but I thought that they told a pretty effective story here with him being overwhelming, which is what they do with him. I mean, that's what he's about, and he's still undefeated in singles competition. It's what, like 19-0 or whatever it is now. I don't remember, but it's a lot. 14?
14-0.
Okie-do. That's what it is now. Yeah, it. I guess I had just lost any doubt that I had. And I did have a tiny bit of doubt last week, just thinking maybe Kross is on the fast track. But I just lost whatever doubt I had, especially when they announced the triple threat for next week. And it was just really, really easy to see Kyle O'Reilly in that challenger spot because there was no other obvious place to put Kyle O'Reilly at TakeOver. I mean, it's obviously not going to be Gargano, but yeah. And, you know, keeping Pete Dunne warm. I think next week is a foregone conclusion and hopefully we'll get some kind of issue attached to that, but maybe not. I thought this match kind of worked, even though it felt in the end inevitable, Tom.
So I've already seen a couple of different, you know, and now including yours, a couple of different reactions of, well, obviously this person is going to be winning the triple threat. And mine is, well, obviously Pete Dunne is going to win it because they only have a 2-week build. He's a guy that you can just slip into that 2-week build, no problem, and we won't feel cheated that we didn't get some grand Pete Dunne story. Gargano, I mean, even if this ends up with Johnny Takeover being left off of Takeover, I'm okay with that. You know, he'll be fine. He's got other stuff going on now with the Way having lost his championship. Granted, we didn't get any furthering of that tonight. We didn't need it right away, but I think that's something that's going on for him that doesn't necessarily – it could, but it doesn't necessarily need the top title thrown into the story there, even as a – I mean, he would lose the match, but yeah, as a wrinkle there. And Kyle, I think this is the spot where Adam Cole comes back, and that's the match that we get at In Your House is Cole O'Reilly. So I think this is where Cole shows his face again after being absent for a while. I agree with you that this match told a good story after really not having much going into it. And part of that is that nobody expected Balor to win. Part of that was that they, right before it, gave away these challengers, all of whom are people that Balor has wrestled recently and would not feel fresh. But yeah, the story absolutely was Cross being insurmountable, and Balor did a good job of making Cross look good without going full Suplex City with it. So I thought it brought to mind Cena versus Brock, but it still had the work ratey stuff. It was not a work rate match. I'm not accusing it of that, but it still had the level of action that NXT fans expect, especially in big main events. So yeah, a lot of things working against this, but it still got there in the end. I think the only thing, the only real knock against it is the way that I don't think that they really got what they wanted out of Cross surviving the pass out spot or whatever. And that some of that might just be whatever positioning, whoever's issue that was, I'm not sure. But also just the inconsistency in how this is done in WWE. Sometimes they hold the arm, sometimes it's just called. And then like 30 seconds after, the arm was the thing that broke the ref, you know, calling for the finish here. Then Finn passes out and they don't do the arm thing. So it's just like, I think that was an issue, but mostly I just feel like this is the way Cross should be presented right now, and they succeeded in doing that.
Yeah, I think a little bit of that no selling in the right spots really, really adds a lot to the feel of these matches. Specifically, that spot outside where he just hopped up and laid out Finn on the table. I think a little bit of that is great. I'd also like to completely abandon my guns and totally throw in immediately, just easily swayed by your diatribe on what's going to happen with the championship. That does make a lot more sense with so much less time to build this. It does kind of put Pete in the awkward position of having twice in fairly quick succession at TakeOver gone up and done the obvious job in the main event or in the NXT championship match. I would not expect that to be the main event if they do O'Reilly Cole again. They also could do Dunn and then have the finish of that match lead to O'Reilly Gargano, which keeps Gargano on the show, you know, Johnny Takeover and whatnot. And then also could lead to Adam Cole returning on TakeOver. So they've got that option as well. Is that even better? I don't know. But both ideas are just probably better than speeding Kyle O'Reilly to this match where 2 weeks is just not enough build. So well done, Tom. You made me immediately doubt everything I've ever believed. Nate, who are you
So, with this, in terms of like, you know, what we're talking about with like the triple threat and stuff, I think you guys pretty much covered it. I've kind of been leaning a little bit, I think, towards Pete Dunne myself, kind of for what Tom outlined. And even though, like, for what you just said too, you know, with Dunne coming in and kind of doing a job at TakeOver for the title, you know, in relatively rapid succession, I think you could even turn that into a story, you know, where he could come back and be like, you know, because he's where he came back from, you know, being away for so long due to COVID and travel restrictions and all that. You know, he kind of came back and had this, you know, tough persona. He could even come back and, you know, after a loss like that and be like, look, like, I can't believe I lost again, and kind of use that to catapult him even a little bit further up, you know, his character a little bit further along. So I'd be totally fine with something like that. In terms of like this match tonight, I was totally fine with it. I wasn't, I'll be honest, I really wasn't looking forward to it. You know, we just saw this not too long ago, Balor and Cross was okay. The first one was okay. Wasn't like my, you know, favorite match of all time, but like, you know, it didn't blow me out of the water either. So, you know, I wasn't like super looking forward to this match tonight, but I certainly enjoyed it. I feel like the way they presented Cross tonight is the way that they should be presenting Cross. I felt like, you know, he certainly came off as a dominant champion. I feel like Balor came off as a formidable opponent. You know, and it's like and Balor didn't look like – he didn't really look weak either. He looked like he was trying to overcome a bigger competitor or a more powerful competitor, if you will. But he didn't look weak either. I think he still looked, you know, kind of strong in all of this. And one thing at the end that I noticed, and this is just – this might just be me, but where that powerbomb spot at the end when Cross powerbombed Balor, the way Balor sold it, it was almost like he no-sold the powerbomb, sat up, and he had a very Finn Balor, like, demon look on his face. He had, like, you know, the tongue hanging out and stuff like that, and that's something he doesn't do without the face paint. So I'm almost, just like I was talking about a minute ago with Pete Dunne losing a couple times and then, you know, having to come back and kind of, like, fight from under and almost, like, reclaim himself. You know, if that was the story they went, I'm wondering if that might be something that they do here with Finn Balor. Now that he's lost the title, he lost the rematch, we haven't seen the demon for a while, and then he kind of showed those little shades of the demon tonight. I'm wondering if, you know, we'll see Balor, or we won't see Balor around for a bit, and when he returns, he's like trying to be, you know, more, you know, more dominant competitor. We might even see some sort of a demon return. Just a little thing I noticed, but I wanted to at least mention it because I thought it was at least worth mentioning.
Bonus podcast guest, Corbin the dog.
Yep, he thinks I'm talking to him and can't figure out why I'm not.
Oh, why don't dogs understand podcasts?
They don't.
It doesn't make any sense. I tell you what, your dog whining, my cat puked like 4 feet away from me while you were talking, so didn't see that coming. So once I throw to you guys next, there's something I got to do real quick. Let's go to the phone lines. Oh, Corporal Fuzzington, I tell you, there are other places to do that.
Is your cat really named Corporal Fuzzington?
Yeah, I mean, I am who I am.
No, I mean, like, I'm not questioning it. I'm just, that's badass. I like it.
Yeah, I'm a ridiculous human being. I knew that I was going to name my cat Corporal Fuzzington before I had a cat. We have two, but I named that one. So there you go.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. So, all right, let's go to the phone lines. Again, that number is 515-605-9345. We've got several of them, so we're going to keep it at one, with a potential follow-up if you had it. But let me go to 615. Ooh, I'm getting a lot of stuff from 615. So 615, you hear me? I'm getting lots of feedback from you.
Yeah. Taylor, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine. I feel like I'm hearing a lot of other things at once in the background is all.
Tom, are you and Nate? Are you guys hearing anything? Are you guys hearing me okay?
Yeah, we're hearing you all right. Why don't you go ahead and say what you got, and we'll put you on mute, and we'll respond.
Okay, cool. It's good to have all three of you back again. But I wanted to say, yeah, Cross, it's the best match of his I've seen, so I'm curious to see where they go with him. I thought it was pretty good. The main things I had, the first real quick thing I wanted to bring up was with the Shotzi Ember against Raquel and Dakota, the match was good, but the Blackheart being very late to, you know, try to take the pin away, I just stayed way too late, and it kind of took me out of the match. I wanted to hear what you guys really quick thought about that. And then I just wanted to hear your thoughts on Frankie Monet, how you think she did in her debut, and where you think that are going with her. Do you think it's a quick run to the, you know, in a title picture, or do you think they'll have, like, just her beat some people for a while and kind of get her revved up? Where do you think they're going to go with her? And I appreciate you guys taking my call. As always, good to talk to y'all.
And good to hear from you, despite whatever the heck that feedback was. Something on the switchboard looks a tiny bit off, so it could be on the side of Block Talk, but I guess we'll find out when we go to our next caller. So, yeah, let's talk women's division. I did not notice this until now, but 3 of 5 tonight's matches were women's matches. That's not really something I think about in the moment. I only noticed it afterwards. So we opened with Shotzi and Ember against Raquel and Dakota for the third time we've seen this match. So kind of a rubber match here, and the faces go over in this one. Dakota has to eat another pin. 11 minutes and 24 seconds. What actually ticked me off about this match is that there was so much interference and such prolonged interference. And they just kept asking the referee to be like, oh, you guys, and not really do anything about it. That once you remove the rules, like, tag team wrestling is uniquely equipped to handle a lot of cheating and a lot of heat. And if everyone's interfering all the time, then none of that is possible. None of it, if it doesn't get thrown out for anything, then why isn't it just a tornado match? But that said, pretty good spots in general. We got Shotzi and Ember going over again. I guess they're probably just going to get another tag team championship match with Indy and Candice. But it seems like Indy and Candice are farther away from a championship match than any of the challengers are, just because they're Candice isn't doing a whole lot, and Indy's got her storyline with Dexter Lumis going on. But on the opener, Nate.
So I got to admit, I really like Shotzi, and I really like Ember. I do not really like Shotzi and Ember together. And it has nothing to do with, like, they're in ring work or anything like that. They're in ring work fine, you know, for the most part. But it's just everything out of the ring. I don't necessarily like their, you know, a lot of that didn't come up tonight, but because of, you know, just the way they've been portrayed, they've been almost like heelish. And we've talked about this a number of times in the past. But because of all of that, I can't get myself invested in anything that they're doing right now. Matter of fact, I mean, the thing that kicked off the show tonight, right after the announcers did their talking, but, you know, the first thing that kicked the show off proper was Shotzi and Ember's entrance. And I rolled my eyes here in the entrance. And I hate saying that because I really like these two, but I don't like the act together. I'm over it. That said, the match itself was good. There were a lot of good spots in the match. Got a lot of good high spots in the match. I agree with you on the, you know, the interference and kind of adhering to the rules. I really wish they would kind of stick to that a little bit more in tag matches, especially. That goes not just for WWE, AEW too. That's a whole other ball of wax. But yeah, I mean, I ended up giving the match a 50-50, the hits and misses tonight, simply because I couldn't give it a miss because it wasn't a bad match. You know, even though, like you said, this is the third time we've seen it, and I it almost felt a little bit redundant. It still wasn't a bad match, and I enjoyed it, but I couldn't find myself getting invested in it because I'm not at all invested in the team of Shotzi and Ember.
Yeah, I think he's probably still.
I was
going to
say,
so.
I was going to say, if he's picking up cat puke.
I was waiting for and Tom, and then I was going to say it's a whole other ball of something, but now we're far enough away from that it probably doesn't land anymore. I'm glad Sean was able to get his stuff in despite the audio issue there. I agree with Kelly that Candice and Indy are feel so far away from the championships that they actually have, and I'm pretty sure I watched them win them. That in this match that I knew somewhere in my mind was a number one contender match, I was waiting for whoever the champions are to come out, and Dakota and Raquel came out, and I'm like, wait, what? Raquel's a double champion right now? It just wasn't in my mind at all that that Candice and Indy have those belts right now. And the issue here was just that we've seen this before, and I don't feel like we really had a good reason to see it again. I think that's probably an issue we're going to get a lot with the women's tag division, such as it is, just sort of a placeholder spot, you know, a different contextualizing of perennial to the top title women in NXT. You know, I said it last week that that losing the titles should have been Ember and Shotzi's clear break from one another. But now, unless I just didn't notice it before, they've got new graphics and a new catchphrase. So, I wasn't a huge fan of this. I admit I did not notice the specific spot that Sean was talking about, but it does not surprise me because Ember and Shotzi have brought out the worst in one another in their promos, but also in the matches because they just work a very sloppy and manic style. So that kind of stuff has happened over and over with them. And it's, you got to find something different to do.
10 pounds of cat puke, 8 pounds of cat. It's not possible. I don't see how it can, it's logistically not a thing. Yes, I'm with you on their manic style. This tag team being less than the sum of its parts, it's unfortunate because if they have a division, they really should have teams. And I guess the manic, frenetic, annoying thing probably works for some, but both of these acts are better off when they're not with each other. That said, a marriage of convenience, and then they feel fresh as singles wrestlers when they go back to wrestling singles. I guess that's not the worst thing. Let's go to that Cora Jade versus Frankie Monet match as well. That went 309. I liked it, but I don't think that it was the intent for me to come away saying, man, I can't wait to see more of Cora Jade. But that's exactly how I felt. I really, really liked her in this enhancement role enough that I think that she should not be in an enhancement role. She is the former Elena Black wrestling elsewhere, but and she was in the tournament, the women's tag team tournament, but I think she was in one of those matches that did not make NXT proper. I don't remember now for sure, but I want to say this is her first match on NXT proper, but looking forward to her more than I am Monet, but Monet was fine. And then they were cute and cheeky with the finish. She finished Cora Jade with the glam slam, not called as such, but Beth did say, well, that looks familiar, Tom.
And we've said the same things that you're saying about Cora Jade, about people like Fabian Aichner and about, to a certain extent, Raul Mendoza, especially Ridge Holland. So this is probably a fine spot for her. And speaking of matches that those people have worked as enhancement talent, this was a very blueprint NXT squash match. Like it wasn't really a squash because the enhancement got some stuff in, but Taya, it was really just a feature for Taya. The one that stands out most to me is Keith Lee, because they just had him doing these for so long to the point where he almost felt directionless. But this is that spot. So I guess all things considered, I'm glad that they're finding time to again, add that one extra thing every couple of weeks. It's like, this feels a little bit more like classic NXT now, I guess. And, it showed something to people who haven't seen Frankie before, I guess, but to the rest of us, it's just like, yeah, yeah, she could have debuted on Raw or SmackDown, and that would have been fine. But since she's here, let's see it play out. And just because I forgot to mention it, I'm sorry, that about that opening tag match. Weren't we supposed to be looking for some further tension between Dakota and Raquel, or at least some tease of it? Because I didn't pick up on it.
That's what I thought.
Response there. I was just like, wait, that was the one thing I was looking for the entire match. And it was just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I wrote that in the recap, but I mean, whatever, they didn't do it. So not sure if we're supposed to assume that was a red herring or that we will see a little bit more of that down the road. But if they take their time, that's fine. Speaking of Keith Lee feeling a little directionless, I mean, they used to do – think of Adam Bomb. He, to me, is the defining one where he was – they'd still call him out as undefeated. Like 9 months, probably, he was beating enhancement talent. And I remember just feeling like at some point – does it mean anything when you're calling a guy undefeated when, like, the most important guy that he's beaten is Barry Horowitz? I don't know.
Lest I'm mistaken, I think you brought up that exact example in the moment when that was happening, when the Keith Lee squashes were happening.
That probably is true because I think of that all the time. He is. I think back to Adam Bomb and me thinking he was so cool and like, why aren't they putting him in bigger matches? And then I saw him in bigger matches and I was like, oh, okay, I get it. Nathaniel, Cora Jade versus Frankie Monet.
Yes, so Cora Jade, I agree. She looked fantastic here tonight. I'd like to see some more out of her. So, I think she looked great. Frankie Monet. So I've got to admit, I think this might be the first time I've actually seen a complete Ty Valkyrie match bell to bell. I'm not 100% sure. And I've definitely watched her wrestle in the past. Mostly it's been like clips and just, you know, things on like YouTube or whatever. So I think this might be the first time I watched her bell to bell. I really dug what I saw. She's from the look, the charisma that she has, you know, the shaved head, everything. She's got this awesome heel persona that has this. She's basically this girl that you love to hate, but at the same time you want to love. At least that's the kind of what I'm getting out of it. And but you know, everything about it I like. I like her personality. I like what she's got. Her intensity in the ring. So yeah, and I agree. I think she could have easily debuted on Raw or SmackDown. You know, whether it be by herself or alongside Morrison, or something like that. Which, hey, with The Miz out now, maybe that'll happen sooner rather than later. But yeah, we'll see. But yeah, overall, I dug this. I dug the match overall, both Cora and Ty Valkyrie. So thumbs up. Move on.
And no idea yet how long it's going to take for all of us to stop saying Taya Valkyrie and get used to Frankie Monet. I guess we'll find out together, folks. But Tom still says Martin Stone in
yep.
place of in place of. Now I can't think of the name.
I'm not going to help.
Oh, I know you're not. Oney Lorcan and Birch, Danny Birch. Yeah. Oh. Damn, outfoxed myself. Okay, we are going to go to the phone lines. This is a Skype call, and I'm scared to turn it on. Are we going to get that feedback again? No.
Hey, guys.
All right. Sounds like a Dane Dabe to me. Am I right?
Yeah, good voice recognition.
There it is. All right. Go ahead.
Hey, I thought this was I agree with your assessment that it is a good show, probably a very solid show, very digestible, but easily forgettable. Like I was watching that main event, and I'm going, all right, you know, just beat Balor already. Like, just move on to something. Just a quick note. I know you guys have covered the triple threat next week. Like Gargano just lost the mid-card title. Pete Dunne is a heel who hasn't really been built up strong enough. And yes, today I noticed he shrugged quite a bit, more than I would have liked. Like one too many times. I think one shrug when the guy was breaking Bobby Fish's arm, that was fine. But then when he was up at the ramp, he didn't need to shrug again. So I'm not interested in Pete Dunne. I'm not into Kyle O'Reilly at all. I have -0 interest in Kyle O'Reilly as a main eventer. So I'm not enthused for TakeOver right now. But since I only have one topic right now, I want to focus on the millionaire confrontation, or whatever it was called, the Grimes-DiBiase tale, which resulted in LA Knight. So heel versus heel, or a LA Knight face turn. Now, first of all, I don't understand why DiBiase is picking on Grimes when he feels he, quote, sees himself in him. But then at the end, we're supposed to still cheer for DiBiase, who the guy just said, I respect how you use money to make people do embarrassing things. How's that a babyface line? This isn't like, you know, neoliberal loving 80s anymore. Like, billionaires are the most hated group in whatever your political belief is. The anti-billionaire ever since the 90s, the anti-billionaire has always been the hero. So I don't get how they thought this would be cheerable. And I don't see how this would get over amongst actual fans. Like, both of them are despicable. And I also just completely missed what LA Knight's actual beef with Cameron Grimes was. So your thought on this segment.
Okay. So, first on the O'Reilly issue. I am very interested in Kyle O'Reilly as a main event player. I'm not interested in this Kyle O'Reilly as a main event player. Cool Kyle, as they so desperately want to label him, is not being done a solid by being called out as such. And I find it frustrating because this is a guy I've wanted to see at the top for a while. He is funny, so they're trying to use that. But I just don't know. I don't know. I'm going to say growing pains for now, and hope that that this is going to tighten up a little bit. But I don't. I don't want to worry too much about Kyle this week, because we'll have plenty about Kyle to talk about next week. They called this the $1 million face-off. So I think that this is probably a face turn for Cameron Grimes. However, if so, then what was the point of having DiBiase outfox him in all these segments and get the face turn, unless that was just kind of a we toyed with your emotions and now this is kind of a double turn sort of thing. I really, really hope that LA Knight is not turning face. I have seen his face act, and we're talking about Pete Dunne doing too much shrugging, and like that kid who finds something good and then annoys the hell out of his parents for the next, I don't know, 2 weeks doing that thing because it made him laugh really hard that one time.
Like this?
Yes. And LA Knight is that guy when he's a face. There is some NWA power out there from the pre-COVID era where he's almost unwatchable in his desperation to be loved, and he just doing his yeah catchphrase sometimes 10, 12, 15 times in a row. Really, really hope this is not a face turn for LA Knight, but it seems like they might as well not stem the tide with Cameron Grimes if everybody's going to be in his corner. I would like a baby face turn in that he's now facing heels, but I'd still like him to be kind of a prick. That is not typically the way I feel. I would like some sort of lean, but I would like this to be a rock sort of lean where he's still a jerk, but he's a jerk who has a code. That would work for me. So yes, as for why LA Knight should have a beef, I don't think this is a beef with Grimes. I think LA Knight is just desperate to prove himself to the $1 million man and answer the call of his unofficial taking under his wing thing? Like, it seems, honestly, it seemed like we missed some lines. That's how I felt, Tom.
So of course I agree with Hitain that the show has been very forgettable lately. I was telling you guys off air beforehand that until someone DM'd me asking for the call-in number about an hour before the show went live on USA, it wasn't even on my mind. And that's not because of the Tuesday thing anymore. I'm used to that now. And I'm not excited for TakeOver, but I thought this was far and away the best thing on the show. Yes. Some lines were missed. I think we saw DiBiase searching for his script in his mind, and I think some stuff got skipped over. But I, of course, have been saying for a while that Grimes is coming off like a face act now. Like, yes, he's the irritable Yosemite Sam, and he's up against baby faces when he is in the ring, and he's trying to be dastardly but failing at every turn. But he's got the sing-along music. He's got the catchphrase that he started to say before he does the cave-in. So he's cueing audience members like, hey, say this when I get in the corner. All the pieces are there for him to be this lovable, if very, very rascally, mid-card babyface. So I was hoping that this would lead to DiBiase and Grimes aligning. And even with DiBiase seemingly missing some of his lines, this was engaging enough just because of that. It wasn't great, but I was still interested in where it was going line by line, because I was wondering if it was going to end in an alignment or in some sort of betrayal or a fake out of some kind, which might have been cheap, especially because, you know, selfishly, I feel the best direction would have been for them to, or at the time, I was feeling the best direction would have been for them to join up together. So let's see, where do I want to go next? I guess just that Grimes, I had another thing I was going to.
You go ahead, think about it. I'm going to say that this was probably my favorite segment as well. And part of that reasoning, I think, imperfect though it was, this was the one segment going in where I felt like I didn't know what was going to happen.
Yes.
And that is
yes.
not something that happens on NXT very often. I don't
right.
know if you found your thing, but I wanted to throw that out there.
I agree. And the little, my skip over to the next thing I was going to mention is just that while I was in the back of my mind wondering if this was just going to be a cheap heel fake out, like most recently on NXT Crybaby Cole, Grimes was, for the first time in his NXT career, I think, presented as a full-on sympathetic face here. All of his dialogue and everything was all sympathetic babyface. So then DiBiase does basically take him under his wing, but then LA Knight, immediately as soon as he hits the stage, it feels like a bigger show. This guy belongs on a bigger stage. Everything about his presence, and this is before he even opens his mouth, and he's having natural reactions with the crowd. He's getting, like, I know we're talking Full Sail audience members here, but he's getting what feels like legitimate heat from them, and not even like what Grimes was getting against Keith Lee with the, like, oh, we're just playing along now because this sort of, like, naturally snowballed with all of us booing him, and now you guys aren't able to finish the segment because we're being so loud. It really felt like people were not happy to see LA Knight and telling him that he doesn't belong there. And he took a moment to soak that in and react to them. And of course, that's exactly what he wants. And then he opens his mouth, and I've said over and over and over again about how LA Knight promos are the best things on the show. I know that I have to pay attention. I am required for the sake of this podcast to pay attention to NXT. So I am consciously like, okay, got to focus on this. When LA Knight is talking, he just draws me in. I don't have to try. It's not even that I am actively wanting to hear what he's saying. It's just that when he's out there, his energy and the way he carries himself just is magnetic. And I'm like, okay, everybody shut up. I got to hear what LA Knight is saying. This feels important because of how he conducts himself. So then this guy who's getting genuine heat lays out our lovable babyface who has just solidified himself as a babyface throughout the course of this segment. And Dastardly DiBiase just decides, oh, well, I guess he's not the one that I want to take under my wing after all. I'm going to go ahead and flippantly, this doesn't seem like it was part of some scheme. He just decides in the moment, maybe I'll walk off with this LA Knight guy, which makes I was just defending the Million Dollar Man as an infallible babyface now, despite his career heel character, at least once he got to WWE. People are always going to cheer for him, but that was an effective heel turn thing. Like, you want to boo that guy going out, and he is almost, it's the idea is that LA Knight is now, the rub is getting spread around. Grimes is getting the DiBiase rub, and now LA Knight is getting the DiBiase rub. But it's almost like DiBiase's heel turn only worked because it was LA Knight, and he was getting genuine heat from the crowd. So now LA Knight is someone who I think highly enough of, obviously, that I don't think he needs DiBiase to stick around. So putting this effective segment that forwarded characters and finally forwarded this damn storyline, putting this in the crossover segment, it really feels like a prime way to have gotten where you wanted to go with DiBiase's involvement. And now he doesn't even really need to stick around anymore, because LA Knight does not need him. He can keep bringing him up, and he can be the reason why these two are upset with each other now. And if it is going to be a takeover match, which they didn't say anything about, but if there's room for it in your house, you probably want DiBiase to show up. But DiBiase doesn't have to be there long-term anymore, because if that rub got spread over to LA Knight, he's a guy who's perfectly fine on his own, and can talk about, wherever this goes with DiBiase, like it was a King of the Ring win, if he wants to keep it around that long. Actually, as I started talking about it, I got more excited about it. I really thought this was quite effective, despite being pretty rocky for about half of it.
Yeah, it classically, this would mean that DiBiase is going to be in the corner of Eli, but he doesn't have to be, and LA Knight can use this anyway. Continue to say that DiBiase is his benefactor. DiBiase doesn't even have to be watching the show, let alone appearing on it, to be part of this storyline, and can show up at his leisure if they really want him to, and they will indeed have gotten out of this what they need to get out of it. Nate, did we leave anything for you to pick the bones of this?
You actually did indeed. So, there's been a rumor making its way around the rumor mill that the Million Dollar Championship is going to be rearing its head again in WWE, potentially in NXT, probably in NXT. And I think this might have been sowing the seeds for that here tonight. DiBiase coming out tonight and saying, that he's looking for the man that, I forget exactly what he said, but embodies the Million Dollar Man, or however he phrased it. I feel like basically it's sowing the seeds to set up for a Million Dollar Championship match. And I don't know how credible the sources necessarily are, but I mean, it was all over the place. So, I'm at least going to bring it up, because I'm sure some of our listeners have probably at least heard it. I've been saying, like, I wanted to see this from the beginning. I think it might have even been the first, if not second time DiBiase came out. I wanted to see him either manage or have some sort of a feud with Cameron Grimes, and I wanted to see the Million Dollar Championship come back. And I think it would be friggin' sweet if it did. I think it would be an awesome little caveat to the Cameron Grimes character. It's a belt that really doesn't mean anything. It's not like it's actually like worth, it's worth $1 million, I guess, but it's not like, it's not like it carries any weight within the company, but it's just that extra bragging piece. It's like wearing that Rolex, and I like it. I think it would be really cool for the character. It would even be cool if he didn't win it and LA Knight did, and now he's trying to chase the $1 million, Grimes is trying to chase the $1 million championship. So I think that could even be cool. everything else you guys talked about, yeah, I'm not going to rehash because I think we've gone quite a bit on this, but I did want to at least bring that up because I could certainly see it happening, and it is something that is at least making the rounds.
I don't need the $1 million championship to come back, but if it does, I better get at least one and probably exactly one appearance of Virgil.
Yes, that's
Virgil's 1991 Royal Rumble face turn is literally still a top five tearjerker babyface moment for me. I watch that moment, just that moment, a couple of times a year. For real. That's what I do. That one and Elizabeth kicking Sherry out of the ring and reuniting with Macho Man Savage. I watch these moments on occasion because I like that kind of thing. So let's go to the phone lines again. This is, I'm pretty sure, a Chicago number from what little I remember. This is 312.
Yes.
Let me know who you are. Am I right?
Yeah, it's Chicago. I'm not in Chicago, but I still have a Chicago number.
I understand. I wouldn't give up my Minneapolis number for the many years I was outside Minneapolis. It made me feel like home.
It's Sean Covington. That's my name. I've been around a little bit. First time calling the show, though. Love the show. Enjoy it. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, thanks, Sean. Yes, I am aware of you mostly on Twitter, and love that you called in tonight.
So where I'm going to go with this is I'm going to throw everything completely off, but it has to do with tonight. You bring up L.A. Knight, Frankie Monet, and those are stars that I think we all believe. We may not know where their ceiling is, but we believe that they could be stars on the quote-unquote main roster on Raw, SmackDown. Now, I also listened to you guys talk about something missing for a while from NXT, and I figured out what that thing is. I pinpointed the exact moment NXT wasn't as special as it was anymore, and it started to lose ratings and everything. It was 2018, December of 2018. There were six call-ups, and out of those six call-ups, three people aren't with the company anymore. One was a tag team, but, you know, worked with me there. Otis, Nikki Cross, and Lacey Evans are still there of those six. Lars is gone. But there was also a seventh, and that was a recent guy. He didn't go up, but he wanted to go up. But when he didn't, he kind of broke the glass ceiling in a bad way, and that was the Velveteen Dream. So when you look at NXT, we all look for new stars. We want to see who it's going to be. We're okay with people going down, but my question for you guys is, who is going to unsalt the earth? Because those six call-ups really left a bad taste in everyone's mouth. It was also part of that infamous moment that I was actually there for, where Vince McMahon and the McMahon family said things are going to change and they were going to listen. Now, however, whether you believe they did what they were going to do or not, it's beyond the point. My point is, who, if you could call up six people today, do they have the ability to right the wrongs of those six? I'm sorry, seven? Or is it just kind of a lost cause with NXT actually making stars? Because that's the point where they no longer made stars. Sure, we got people who do stuff like Keith Lee, Riddle. Don't get me wrong. It's not like they don't have people who are good. The star power, like a Rusev, you know, that was next level. The guy came out on the tank in WrestleMania. Do you see anybody even getting back to that level? Possibly in any six in there now, anybody who could just get to that level?
That's a big question, obviously. So, yeah, Dream, I wondered if we'd pass through the way of Dream. Dream, a cautionary tale. Remember that as much as you love the art, some of these artists are going to let you down. And man, oh man, oh man, is this one that I wish had not let me down, because the work when it was on was so incredible. But when he was let go, folks who had been biting their tongue for a while started talking about how he was the single most unprofessional person they'd ever dealt with there in the company. I do most of the Triple H media calls, and Triple H also loved the work, but I wouldn't say he spoke in code exactly about Velveteen Dream, but it always seemed like there was more being unsaid than there was being said. It's hard. As for those call-ups, so here's the thing. If you're calling people up, because it's merit-based. So at the beginning of NXT, where Tom and I are still watching 8 years back, and they're only a year in or whatever it is, people get called up when they're at the top of the company of NXT, and it's seen like a graduation because you have beaten NXT, and you're on to level two. And that's kind of how NXT was treated then. Now, it's not necessarily that way. NXT's meant to draw ratings, not to be this feeder system for Raw and SmackDown. It still is, but the idea is to brand it and make it as big as it too can be. So you've got to have guys and girls anchoring this show. And as a result, some of these call-ups, they seem baffling in the moment. I didn't feel like Heavy Machinery was, I don't know if they weren't ready or if it was just like, they're not going any higher than this. They've called up people they had no plans to do anything specific with, like EC3, who for me is not like a miss. He's terrible, whatever. But he was somebody that they brought up and didn't do anything with. But every time you do that, you lose a little bit of equity, and NXT as a result loses a little bit of its mystique because it was seen as this infallible platform to create stars. And then you started bringing up people just because you wanted them to work somewhere else. And meanwhile, better talent is staying in NXT to anchor that show for longer, because Keith Lee could have gone up pretty early, but he didn't because he was anchoring NXT. Really big question. Six people you bring up. If you bring up six right now that you think can move the needle, then I don't know what's left. I think it's very problematic. Cole is an easy one. I don't know if Cole is going to shine Raw and SmackDown. I don't know if Vince is going to love him, but I think that he's somebody you could bring up. Bronson Reed, I think, probably has an as good or better career on the main roster as he does here. Grizzled Young Veterans strike me as a team that's going to work no matter what their surroundings. Pete Dunne, same deal there, I think, no matter what his surroundings. Probably Io Shirai, but I don't know for sure that they'll know how to use her. And honestly, I'll say Dakota Kai. I think her heel act works so well here that that she could be the kind of person who wins a championship every now and then hides behind it and gets a lot of cheap wins or DQ losses. I think that makes sense. So that's my quick and dirty answer. But if you take six right now, it seems like the cupboards could be fairly bare. Nate?
Yeah, I agree. I think if you tried to take six from NXT right now and bring them up to the main roster, it does not leave a whole lot. I'm sitting here, I'm on Wikipedia right now, scrolling up and down through the roster, and mostly the names that you've already brought up are the names that I'm coming up with. You know, I've got maybe Kushida or even Swerve, I think, with Swerve. And even if you were to take Hit Row and move them or something like that and count them as one,
that's a good one.
I guess, you know, you could do something like that. Sorry, I had something caught in my throat. You know, something like that could be good. But, you know, I agree. I think, I think they're if that was to happen right now, it would really kind of, you know, it would really kind of take a lot of the wind out of sails of NXT. You know, we've talked about this in the past, and I actually wrote about this in the Hits and Misses tonight. NXT is really light on top baby faces too right now. So, you know, I think in a way, maybe if you were to, you know, kind of swap some of the top heels over to Raw or SmackDown, that would kind of make room for some of the undercard faces to rise up a little bit. But at the same time, you know, do you really want to do that? Take star power away from your, you know, away from your roster and, you know, at a time where you're trying to get more eyes on the product and not lose, you know, lose people. So, you know, I definitely kind of agree there. As far as like, you know, what Sean was talking about with like, you know, 2018 and those, you know, those call-ups back then, I can remember thinking back then, you know, I wasn't on the show and I wasn't actually working with the Torch at that point, but I can remember thinking to myself, you know, like, you know, Heavy Machinery didn't feel like it was their time to be called up yet. I felt like they still had a little bit more to do on NXT. Same thing with Lee. I don't want to say Lacey Evans. I don't think it was her time, but I feel like she probably did. She had a pretty good, you know, run on the main roster, but I also kind of felt like that might have been a little bit rushed for her. She had a little bit more to do in NXT. I kind of expected her to be an NXT Women's Champion. I was very surprised when she didn't actually win that. I don't know if you can as far as pinpointing that as the time the ratings going down, I'll believe you. I'd have to look at the data in order to, you know for sure. I'll just take your word for it. But, it doesn't necessarily surprise me either, because, you know, you did start to lose some of that star power at that point in time. Then, you know, we start getting into, the time that I joined the show the same time AEW, it was the same day that we jumped on USA, and it was the same day that AEW launched. It was the first day I was on the show. And we jumped into that in 2019, and then the whole landscape of NXT started to change between the two-hour format and, you know, going head-to-head against AEW. Just everything did just start to change. So the focus, I feel like, is now more like WWE, where it's not a feeder system anymore, or even though it is a feeder system, but they're not treating it like a feeder system. I feel like the focus is more on in WWE, where the focus isn't making stars, it's making the brand relevant. So I feel like that's almost kind of the same thing that they're doing with NXT. They're not making another Sami Zayn. They're not making another Kevin Owens. They're not making another big star like that. Maybe you could make the case for Gargano and Ciampa, but there's nobody else in NXT that I feel like is in that same mold. And I don't really see anybody else on the roster that I feel like could even stand out like that, simply because of the way that they've been booked. And that's kind of what makes me think that they're really trying to push the brand, just like WWE is trying to push the brand over making another John Cena, Stone Cold, Rock, Undertaker, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's my 2 cents.
Tom, what are your 2 cents?
Very good to hear from you, Sean. Let's see if I can piece together a couple of cents here. I think so much of the issue, and part of this is really obvious, but so much of the issue isn't NXT's preparation of talent, but it's just how they're used after the fact. The six that we're talking about, the six pack of call-ups there, I have a hard time arguing with any of them, I think. I mean, we're still talking about a time where the call-up was still very much a part of how NXT did things. And even though we would worry for the Tyler Breezes and Baileys that didn't get their due right away, as we felt they should have, they still did a fine job of cycling through talent and building up next waves and next waves. And you look at somebody like Lacey Evans, and they did craft a big push out of the gate that served Lacey Evans' strengths, but then down the road they failed her. And I don't feel like people want to blame Lacey Evans because she's an easy punching bag. Looks like a Barbie doll and doesn't work like Asuka. But I, as we've covered, you know, in 2018, we had so – we talked about Lacey Evans more – it was like a running joke that we talked about Lacey Evans more than just about any wrestler on the NXT roster, because there was a lot of interest there, and she was really showing a lot. And I feel like WWE creative and whatever on that side of things was the real failure there. And they tried to reheat her with the Ric Flair thing again before she got pregnant. But that's just the specific example. So I personally would look further ahead to, if we want to pick a call-up as a milestone, it is furthering that transition, which yes, had already been going on in a way for years and years and years, but more and more significantly with people like Gargano and Ciampa basically becoming, you know, unofficial NXT lifers. You know, I feel like the transition to now being the C show that isn't really a developmental show anymore was the Keith Lee call-up. I already had my issues with Keith Lee's title win and feeling like that was a hot shot for ratings. But then his call-up was not only the first domino to fall in a chain reaction that got NXT to the point it is at now, but it was also poorly timed on the main roster side too, because they didn't have anything for Keith Lee. They had Randy Orton put him over, and they had nothing for Keith Lee after that. So it's just bad timing on both sides, and so that's the one that's emblematic for me of the shift in what NXT represents, really, and what they're trying to accomplish with it. So I actually look at the idea of doing another six-pack of call-ups as a good thing that would, like you look at what Hitain was saying that I agree with, that we're just not excited about what some of these top acts on NXT are offering right now. But Karrion Kross going to SmackDown and challenging Roman, or going over to Raw and challenging Bobby, I'm kind of curious about how that would go. What would main roster Karrion Kross look like? Sure, why not? Would they capitalize or slip on the banana peel with Adam Cole? Or would you know, what would happen? I've talked ad nauseum about, you know, what I feel Cole's potential is. So yeah, let's go ahead and cut some of these people loose, because you've got people right behind them that I feel then NXT would be forced to run with the way that used to be baked into the NXT cake. You've got, the first one that comes to mind is Zoe Stark. Zoe Stark is right there. You can give people like Xia Li and Casey Catanzaro and Caden Carter more reps. Karen Q, wherever that's at, it's suspicious to me that they're still keeping that under wraps, the Mei Ying thing. But you know, give them some more reps. Tyler Rust, what the heck is going on? Get this guy on TV. Get Malcolm Bivens out there. There's your North American champion. Swerve and Hit Row over the show, as far as I'm concerned. Escobar. I mean, Escobar and Swerve are also guys that I might say, like, you know, send them to Raw or SmackDown. But again, looking at options here, I feel like Cameron Grimes is also an option in that same sort of, like, you could send him up or keep him kind of thing, but the elevation potential is obvious. And then the other ones that I look at, not necessarily as the tag team they are right now, for as entertaining as it is, but for their individual potential, and some people might look at me sideways, but are Drake Maverick, just because we've seen again and again and again and again. There's the one obvious example when he almost got released, but, you know, in other instances as well, just how effective he is as a sympathetic babyface. I mean, you genuinely feel for the guy, and he knows how to genuinely convey that, and he knows how to manufacture it. And he's very entertaining. And Killian Dane, that's the one I think especially people will look at me sideways for, because he's just like a mid-card monster, you know, the unbeatable force that always gets beaten. But I really think Killian Dane has shown a lot of strengths over the years, and he could be a top act if you let him. So I really think that would be an interesting proposition for NXT to be forced into. I would be curious to see that pan out, and I would be lying if I didn't say that I've actually been thinking about this kind of thing lately. Like, if the top layer just got stripped away, who would I want in my next up version of NXT? And so this is something that's been boggling around in my mind lately.
You grabbed me with Get Tyler Rust and Malcolm Bivens back on TV, and you owned me with Hit Row Can Take Over the Show. They absolutely can, and all I want to do is talk about them, but we'll get there. So, okay. God, they're cool. Okay, so let us go to our last call. That number is 515-605-9345. This is our friend Darrell, a patient man. But he's with us here as always. Sorry last week about whatever the hell happened with the switchboard where we couldn't even see the episode, but glad to be talking to you, Darrell.
How are you guys doing today? And it's no problem. I made sure I called in late so I could be the last. So it was no issue.
All right.
And I listened to y'all show. Y'all did a great show, even though y'all got hit with none of y'all calls reasons why y'all couldn't do the show.
Yeah, well, Tom and I are old pros at doing a two-man booth, so thankfully.
Let's be honest, Kelly couldn't figure out the switchboard without me.
Oh, please. The switchboard has nothing on it. I did the only thing I needed to do. Nate adds essentially nothing.
That's what I do the best at. Add nothing.
Yeah, it was so weird. It was just like the switchboard was there. There was nothing on it. Not the episode. Not any of the callers. Not the on-air sign. Like. It was like it was a dummy site. I don't know what was going on. I think we were being punked.
Yeah, probably so. Probably so. Well, this week's show was okay, and I was just listening to what you guys were saying about sick people who could be potential callers or be next stars. That goes into a question that I wrote into to Todd and Wade about the call-up thing and how WWE got people entrenched into their train of thought with that call-up and have people wishing for that when they only use 30 people on both Raw and SmackDown on TV every week, the same 30 people. So you split that in half, 15 and 15. Sometimes it's an odd number where it might be 20 on this show and 10. But they got 100 people sitting in the back that they don't use for months and months on the time. So I think the call-up system should be done away with unless it's somebody who really breaks out as a star. Because all you're doing is sentencing somebody to death because usually those 30 people who they use are the same 30 people who they're going to use every day. And it's hard for people to jump a Sheamus or Randy or whoever like that. So no matter what you see in somebody, it's hard to jump those guys. So I wouldn't wish that on nobody. The call-up system should be abolished for a little while until they can figure that out. But my question for you guys tonight, and it's going into two groups that came on back-to-back to a point. That's Hit Row with the promo that they gave, which I enjoy their potential stars, and I guess we might get people going against the title contender after In Your House. That's one place that I predicted might happen. He might go after the main title, and you had Legato coming out there and finally stating his claim for the North American title. How do you like that? How do you like those two groups going after that? And could be a potential matchup if Legato win the tag team match, you might could see, and what could that bring? What do you guys think about that?
Darrell, we thank you. It's always good to hear from you. The call-up system, I am all for reassessing it. And, you know, you can tear it down entirely and build it up another way. It seems very perfunctory, the idea of getting rid of people at a certain time of year, shortly after their WrestleMania bonuses, which I guess is something, and then doing your call-ups the way you do in batches. But there's always people who are lost in the shuffle. Maybe it's easier for a content creator, for the writers, the bookers of NXT to deal with a big loss of six or seven people and then know that they're not going to lose anybody for a while. Maybe that's easier for them to create the show doing that than it is knowing that at any moment they could lose a high profile name. But that also gets us out of situations that are sticky where they, you know, it's time to send up six people. So we send up EC3 to die. We send up Chelsea Green to never make TV almost ever before she's gone. And now I'm no longer the only person who can't pick her out of a one-woman lineup. Nobody can because she got like no time before she was gone. And you just throw these people up there to die. And it's, yeah, the call-up system could be streamlined, or not even just streamlined, just totally ripped out, ripped down and built up anew. Hit Row, I think, is a main event act waiting to happen. I watch a lot of New Japan. I watch a little AEW, and with all the factions out there, this is still my favorite. This is the coolest faction. I love how good they are already at figuring out how to give a four-person promo where everybody's getting their time in. Granted, today's could have been edited to oblivion, but it seems like they're doing a very good job of knowing when to step forward and take focus and step back and give it. All four of them giving to one another, enhancing one another while also putting themselves over. And this also, for me, was a segment that recalled some of my favorite early Survivor Series four or five man interview segments, where not only are they all getting their time, but they're all providing a mission statement. Like, my job is to take down this guy. Like, even tag teamers, like Axe is saying, I got to take down Hawk or whatever. I thought that this was great that they provided a mission statement, these guys, for where they're headed. Ashanti and Top Dollar both talking about championships they want. And it seems like they would fit in those areas. Now, whether or not it's time for them anytime soon to do this, I'm not sure, but I love that we've opened that up, and I just love the presence that that Swerve has here. It's just, it's off the chain. I love this so much. Okay, so I'm sure there was more, but I started talking about Hit Row, and now I don't care about anything else. Tom?
Do I have anything to add to the continued call-up conversation? For the issues that I currently have with the main roster that have got me, not tuning in again, I'm back off of that train at the moment. The rhythms of it aren't really what bother me. I don't mind the cycles that they go through, and they make sense to me. They make logical sense to me, as long as they're capitalized on, which is extremely hit and miss. And I guess, if there's one thing I missed in responding to Sean that I could mention here, it's just that, you look at the fact that Triple H looked at what they had and changed it into this version of NXT that is or was literally designed to be a miniature Raw and SmackDown, and to prepare people for not just becoming wrestlers, but becoming WWE acts. And there was one time where I insisted on having the conversation on the podcast, just playing devil's advocate, like, okay, we're all like, yay, what the Performance Center is doing and everything. But then we see how Asuka and Andrade are doing on the main roster now after how much we loved them in NXT. And are those two acts that they maybe needed to think outside the box with a little bit more and maybe help, you know, help them a little bit more than they may have. And, and especially with Andrade, I don't think they did much, at least, you know, based on what information we are able to glean from the outside, with English language promos. Because again, even though the issue is not playing to their strengths and not worrying about how great they are at English and just, you know, pushing them for the other talents that they have, we also know that can be a deal breaker for Vince. So just look realistically at the company that you're in and be like, all right, well, while you're here, let's really work on this. I know you might be stubborn about it, but if you want to succeed once you go to Raw, we know the way around here, and you're really going to want to put in the time. You'll thank us later. That kind of thing. So that's just like a devil's advocate sort of thought on that, if that adds anything to Darrell's extension of that subject. And yeah, Hit Row, I mean, they continue to just play off one another beautifully. And I wondered if with them, I don't think Brandy mentioned the women's championship. So that seems to signal that she's still a work in progress in that regard. But with the guys mentioning every title in NXT very specifically, it was the Pete Dunne thing from the prior week where Pete Dunne was just like, yeah, I do want all of the titles, you know, or I have reason to want this one and here's why. I have reason to want this one and here's why. And just the fact that Swerve just got through calling out or saying that he was going to keep his eye on the North American title scene, and now this week he's even mentioning the top NXT title, that makes me wonder if this wasn't an audible that was called, saying like, you know what, let's throw his name in the hat, because this already in just two outings is going so well. It's one of the best things on the show, and people are, you know, fans are responding to it well, that yeah, let's not cap you at North American level.
Nathaniel.
All right, I apologize for my change in audio quality, but my dog needed to go outside, so I called into the show and turned myself on. So I don't know what I really have to add from, you know, what you guys have already been talking about as far as, like, you know, the call-up situation. I've been saying it for years. I think it needs to be overhauled, needs to be changed. You've got people that, you know, basically just rehashing what you guys said. It's like, you know, you get people that get called up, like, you know, whether it be EC3, Asuka, whoever. And they just, you know, nothing gets, they just flounder. I almost cringe anytime somebody has that I really like gets called up the main roster, because I just feel like they're going to flounder. Even Rhea Ripley right now, I mean, she's a Raw champion. She's a Raw, you know, women's champion. And she's not even really like the focus of the Raw women's division, and she doesn't seem really important, even though, you know, she's the champion. And it's just weird. Like what they've done with Rhea Ripley, you know, and kind of have, she's kind of been like this, she hasn't really been like a face or a heel. She's kind of like leaned both directions in a way, you know, over recent weeks. And I was getting some shades of that in her last couple NXT matches. But just, you know, the simple fact that, like, you know, she was like my favorite thing in NXT about, you know, what, a year ago, year and a half ago. And now it's like she's an afterthought on the main roster. And every time there's a call up, they're afterthought on the main roster. So, yeah, I'm kind of in agreement. I think that there really needs to be more communication between NXT and basically, I guess, between Triple H and Vince, really, in terms of getting these people up on the main roster and continuing this, continuing some of their stories from NXT. I understand, like, they almost want to keep NXT separate from WWE, and you know, they don't, a lot of times they don't bring up the fact that these people might have been, like, former tag champions in NXT, or, you know, even former NXT champions, for that matter, because they kind of like to keep the canon a little bit separate. But, you know, I don't think they should do that. They really should almost continue some of these stories. Like, you know, for instance, Asuka, when she got called up, you know, she retired, relinquished the NXT women's title because she was undefeated, and then they, you know, brought her up to the main roster, and they kind of continued that undefeated streak. So in a way, you know, I mean, we were kind of talking about her as somebody that they floundered with, you know, and didn't really push well, but at least the way they brought her up, I kind of liked the way they at least brought her up. And I think they need to do more of that. There needs to be more of taking these stars and making them into bigger stars on a bigger stage, rather than what Vince wants to do and what the company directive is, you know, focusing on making the company the big thing. Because clearly it's not working. Yeah, I mean, I know they're making more money than they've ever made before, but like they're losing fans hands over fist, and especially in a time where you've got a different wrestling product every single day of the week. It's not necessarily WWE. There's so much different wrestling out there. There's so many different things to watch. WWE is never going to go away. I don't think they're ever going to go away. They might, but you know, there's so many alternative products to watch. It's almost baffling that so many people continue to stay with WWE. But Hit Row's awesome. Love him. Greatest, probably the best thing on NXT right now. Can't complain. I'm going to let the dog in and jump back in my headset so I don't sound like crap anymore and throw it back to you guys.
Yeah, WCW was never going to go away until they did. So I don't know. It can happen to anyone. AWA floundered until they died in 1991 with Larry Zbysko as their heavyweight champion. High time in AWA. Okay. Let's go to the stuff we didn't talk about on the show. We'll kind of speed through the rest of this, and then we'll get to some emails. We got two matches we haven't talked about, which is impressive since there were only five. Bobby Fish versus Pete Dunne. 12-11, this one went. Pete Dunne goes over. Dunne seemingly being kept hot for this match next week. It makes sense to give him some wins. Bobby Fish out there with some new blandly inoffensive rock theme. Not actively bad, which is a step up from a lot of guys when they first get a singles act. And I thought he acquitted himself fairly well here in this singles arena when I didn't really know what to expect from him because he so easily fades into the background for the most part. But I thought that he was fine. We also got Zeta Ramir versus Mercedes Martinez. This was a 326 squash for Mercedes, although don't overlook Zeta Ramir. I really like this kid. I think she's going to be good too. I love what she does as a bump machine. But this was to get a storyline started for Mercedes in that it seems like she's the next one marked to be, you know, in the recap, I said, obviously she's got a date with Xia Li, but maybe she's got a date with Karen Q, Mei Ying. So, and it could be both. It could be that Mercedes is the one to beat Xia Li, only to have to face the final boss, but I'm not sure there. Before I go to the non-wrestling segments that we have not covered, Tom.
Mercedes gets a recovery win, Zeta gets TV time, and Qian Sha is finally factored back in. So all of that is a thumbs up. And yeah, I mean, commentary talked up Bobby Fish nicely. And I think this is probably, again, sort of surprising myself by saying the three times that we've seen him since he showed back up again, that Bobby Fish is coming off nicely. This might very well be a best case scenario for a guy who could easily have just been forgotten about by the audience if he never returned. And this I don't know, maybe this switches me over to being a pessimist actually, but imagine that. But this, I think, is Bobby Fish's ceiling. I don't even mean that as a bad thing. They threw him in there against Pete Dunne in a singles match for his return match. We knew he wasn't going to win this. And so going out there and having pretty good matches to put over more bankable talent, okay, Bobby Fish.
Yeah, if you can be Cassius Ohno for 7 or 8 years, you should. And I feel the same way. I don't think, and also Fish is not a young guy. So he doesn't have this main event run in him, probably. Yeah, I think that this would be great if he could do this for a while. And how do you keep him hot on occasion? That's the big question. Do you bother feeding enhancement talent to Bobby Fish? Because that's TV time, and what are you going to do? Nate, on those two matches.
All right, so I'll start with, I'll start with Mercedes Martinez and Zeta Ramir. I thought that the match itself was, obviously it was going to be a squash match for Mercedes Martinez, which, clearly it was. I really like Zeta Ramir, like you said, definitely somebody to watch out for, I think. Because one of the things actually that I kind of kept in the back of my head and commentary kept bringing up too, is the fact that she got that upset win over Toni Storm. And I was almost thinking, I knew it was a 10% chance, maybe even less, that she might get some sort of an upset win over Mercedes Martinez. And, that would be pushing her to the moon if she did. But, there's just something in the back of my head that was I really like her. I like the way that she moves around the ring. I like what she brings to the table. And they seemed to have their eye on her as well. So I was thinking maybe, just maybe, they'd do something. Maybe some sort of a distracted win or something, but have her actually get the win. But they didn't. And that's fine. I think that's probably the better choice considering, who the opponent is. Mercedes Martinez probably should not be losing to, people that are that low on the card, considering her character. I think probably Mei Ying is the direction that they're going here. I like the mark on the hand thing. That was cool. But that's kind of why I think it might be her and not necessarily Xia Li. She might end up feuding with Xia Li first and then, maybe next week feuding with Xia Li and then takeover is Mei Ying, Karen Q, whatever we want to call her. That's kind of at least my thought there. With Pete Dunne and Bobby Fish, first I do want to say that I about a year ago I said something and I think it was inaccurate, so I just want to come back to it and see if I can rectify that. So I at the time I was not thinking that a standard stove has four burners, so I was thinking that Bobby Fish could only fry about 144 pieces of fish in a 24-hour period, and then I'm like, no, there's four burners. So if that's the case, if Bobby Fish could fry fish, he could fry about 576 pieces of fish in the 24-hour period if Bobby Fish could fry fish. I want to just get that out there and make sure that was clear. I didn't want people thinking that, it was only 144 because 576, that's a lot of fish. With that out of the way, I'm actually really rooting for Bobby Fish in a singles run. He was the most unimportant person in the Undisputed Era. He was the fourth man in the Undisputed Era. Nobody, everybody else had more storylines, had more high-profile storylines. So I was really kind of pushing to see him come back almost as an Seth Rollins architect. Wow, why am I putting a P in that word? Architect type of character. And almost kind of that he started the breakup and he was the one that kind of planted these seeds and whatever. And that was probably putting a lot more thought into it than they would have or whatever. But I just thought that'd be kind of a cool thing, especially where the breakup of Undisputed Era was a little bit underwhelming. And we've talked about that. So I was kind of hoping to see something like that, but they're not, they're not going in that direction. And Corbin was going nuts on a toy right now. Apologize for that. Obviously that's not the direction they're going, but I do like what they've got going on here. He looked great tonight. He gave, he gave Dunn a great match. And, like you said, if you can be the Cassius Ohno, be the Cassius Ohno, be that guy that can, give you that gatekeeper that can give you a good match against anybody. I think it's a great spot for him. And at the same time, I there is part of me that still kind of wants to see if there is anything else they can do there. He is no spring chicken. It's probably his, one of his last hurrahs, I guess, maybe, who knows. But I think it'd be kind of cool to have him feud a little bit more with Adam Cole or even maybe Strong or something when he comes back, and kind of see what he could do. I don't know if people are necessarily going to care about it. I do, because you know, where he was the most least – he was the least important person of that faction. I almost feel like he needs to come back and do something of importance involving the members of that faction. So that's at least my thought. And I think, yeah, those are the two things we need to talk about. There we go.
Indeed. We had some backstage and talk segments with Ciampa and Thatcher. Indy Hartwell goes back and ends up talking to Ever-Rise and to Drake Maverick in one of the weirdest groupings of wrestlers ever that you never thought you'd see on screen at once. And goes into the secret Dexter Lumis room where he has made a lot of art about his heartbreak. We got a little bit from Grizzled Young Veterans, Imperium. Bronson Reed talked about, well, he got interrupted by Legado del Fantasma, who got, in turn, bothered by MSK. MSK didn't get booed this week. I thought that was critical. Very happy about that. So good for them that a little bit of time is killing off the boo birds there. Regal makes the triple threat. And also makes the MSK versus Legado del Fantasma match. We also got 53 minutes and 2 seconds of wrestling on this show. JB emailed us at pwtorch@nxt@gmail.com. Hi team, it's JB from Detroit. First of all, am I alone in thinking the singularly dumbest thing about tonight's show was the Bobby Fish's new Titantron / tights logo is that of the outline of dead fish bones? In my opinion, that reaches how many fish does Bobby Fish fry levels of cringe. It didn't bother me.
Thanks, JB.
It doesn't bother me because it's Bobby Fish and the height of him is whatever. Secondly, I'm not a huge fan of Brianna Brandy referring to NXT as the land of opportunity during the Hit Row promo. This gives me a very 2016-17 SmackDown Live vibe, and I want NXT staying as far from prior main roster tropes as possible. I dig what you're saying, but they're going to brand stuff as much as they can. Finally, I really like how they culminated what I presume to be the Cameron Grimes face turn tonight. They clearly thought this out for several weeks with the Million Dollar Man storyline and really made it work by pitting Grimes against an even more detestable heel in LA Knight. With rumors that there are to be several NXT call-ups to Raw and SmackDown in the coming weeks, I could see Grimes being quickly elevated to the main event scene to be the next takeover challenger for Cross or Balor, as they can both lean heel if need be. As always, love the show. And go VIP! I would love to see Grimes in that main event segment at some point. But right now, he's very funny. He's very silly and whimsical. And that's not where they're going to slot somebody like that. He can get a lot of TV time and stay employed that way. But he's not going to get a top title run, or even a match, being in this role. That does not bother me. I just want him on my television all the time. So on any of the other segments or that particular email, Tom.
Had a couple things on the email when it came in, but I think I've ended up covering all of them over the course of the show. So I will just say. I'll point out rather that the fish bones ain't new, but yeah, putting them up on the LED boards, the mini Thunderdome there definitely made it more prominent. I think it's weird that this between infiltrating a massage and putting his hands on Indy Hartwell when she did not know that that's what was happening. Between that and then obsessively doing all of this art and putting it up in this little room, right now is the most creeped out that I've ever been by Dexter Lumis, the previous bar being not doubt at all. He's just the boring character. Get him off my TV. But now he's supposed to be a babyface. So that's weird. And then, yeah, that now I remember that that was the other thing Darrell brought up was the Escobar coming out and challenging for the North American title, which we expected. But since he definitely is coming out as the first challenger now, and thankfully he saved the segment because, speaking of playing to people's strengths, this just isn't one of Bronson's. I hate feeling like I'm beating up on the guy. I really do. I know I haven't had too many great things to say about him lately. I really think he's fine. But this isn't a strong point. It was ultimately okay, but once Escobar came out there and started talking, the water level rose a bit. But anyway, with him actually for sure, coming out and challenging first, it does make me worry that he's just being set up to lose. Because I don't know, like, is Bronson Reed really going to be a transitional babyface champion? But I also kind of feel like Escobar is the kind of guy that could lose something like this on his way up to becoming a main eventer for NXT. So I'll try to keep that silver lining in mind.
Nate, on those emails.
All right. So we've got reading through JB's email again here.
JB's email and then whatever, if there's anything on the non-wrestling segments we hadn't
covered. Yeah, I'm trying to be honest, I don't know if I really have anything else that we haven't covered yet. The only thing is, I really don't think that the How Many Fish Did Bobby Fish Fry was that cringy.
You know, if it had been something that they tried to make happen on a much, much, much bigger level.
Then it would have been.
But it was something that Matt Riddle did for a few weeks, and it could have become overlong and terrible, and I think it was on the verge of that, and it was gone as soon as it was there partially because Riddle was called up. So,
and I'll be honest, I brought that up before I even reading JP's email. It was a complete coincidence.
Yeah, that's I knew that, and I knew that email was coming, and I was like, oh, well, there we go. Okay, we have two more emails. I'm going to read them both before I throw to you guys. This is from Mike C. Hey, fellas, big fan and first-time emailer. The idea of giving matches away for free and saving matches for TakeOver seems to come up a lot on your show, and I just wanted to push back on that a little bit. The TV rights deal with NBC is NXT's primary source of revenue. TakeOvers are only 4 or 5 times a year, and based on live viewership, make up a largely insignificant portion of the WWE viewing hours on Peacock. I get that TV used to be structured that way, but that was only because the business was structured that way. They are now TV content creators and need to promote that. If anything, saving big matches for TakeOver means saving your biggest matches for the events that generate the least amount of revenue. Live viewership and ratings is what keeps NXT in business. Criticizing pace and structure is still 100% fair game. The show should feel easy and fun to watch. With a 2-hour show every single week and 6 different championships, there's usually 8 to 12 stories going on and at any given moment. There's no reason you can't stagger those stories so that at least one or two have big moments matches on every episode. It's actually a story structure Paul Levitz used to use when writing Legion of Superheroes in the 80s so that each issue had a big hook. Sorry for going so long, but I feel like this shift in the business regarding pay-per-views isn't discussed enough. Interested in your thoughts. Keep up the good work. Mike from Illinois. I was going to throw to both emails, but this one is dense, and I want to talk about that because, this is – it's good stuff. So I know that the – here's the problem. They're always working towards takeovers, and it feels like we're on the hard sell to takeover way too much of the time. But then there are these very special episodes that I think if I thought that it was an attempt to make a really good TV show on a regular basis, that would be one thing. But if I think that it's just because they needed to counter program Wednesdays, then it's very tiresome. And so even if the show could be identical, intent is everything. with the number of championships they have now, they kind of can sort of get away with a championship match every week. And that's what we're seeing. We've seen championship matches for the last several weeks in a row, and we will see one next week. And I don't know the next time that we won't see one. But for the most part, I would like to see people fighting towards championship matches and not so many given away for free. I mean, you could take a version of this email and put it on any given television show at any time and say there should be more of this or less of this. And I don't know if anybody knows if we're right or wrong. But it's certainly interesting because I think they're doing a little too much of it, but I'm also trying to acknowledge the fact that there are five championships now. Five, six. Men's and women's, tag and tag, cruiserweight, and North American. Six.
Six, yeah.
So I guess it's not so weird that you would have a championship match every week, because it's reasonable that any given championship would go six or more weeks without being defended on TV. So, God, six championships. Tom and I are watching NXT 8 years back at a time where there are two. Tom?
I am very glad that Mike sent in this email, even though I'm going to push back on it subjectively. I can only speak from where I'm sitting. I'm not a big numbers guy. I would be very interested in hearing someone who is respond to this. But the email brings up some very, very good points that I'm glad were aired on the show. But from where I'm sitting, the word that keeps coming to mind in response to this is deleterious, that it may seem that on the face of it, yes, the ad deals and channel contracts and whatever it is extremely profitable. That's the bread and butter. That's what lets the suits kick back and be like, yeah, we've got some wiggle room. We're all right. And so you want to draw to that. But for me, engaging television is feeling like the journey to the crescendos is important. And I'm sure, you know that there's other stuff like the success of converting viewers into subscribers and into merchandise buyers and everything like that as well, with the TV acting like a commercial. But that's always been where it's been at for me, is feeling like I've got to tune into the TV. It's appointment television for me, because I need to know what the next half step in this storyline is that I know is going to crescendo at the big show. And even if that revenue stream is not as significant at the big show anymore, per the argument of this email, I still feel like that formula works. And that's what makes me feel like the TV is important. And it's a deleterious effect when they keep on putting big matches out constantly on the TV that, yeah, sure, there are big matches that they're putting out constantly, but as a result, they feel less and less important each time. I blew the point earlier, but if I hadn't, I was keeping in my back pocket for this, that yes, indeed, it is not an exaggeration. I legitimately forgot NXT was a thing until I got a DM an hour before it went on USA Today. I mean, this is coming from somebody who covers it on this podcast almost every single week and who covered the hits and misses and wrote a column about it last week. It should be pretty present in my mind, especially with a title match coming up and a lot of other stuff advertised for this show with Ted DiBiase and with the women's tag match and everything. And yet it was not at all. And that's really a big red flag, I think, that they promoted so much and still the furthest thing from my mind, even though this is something I've been doing every single week for years and years now. So I think that about sums up where I'm personally sitting on the matter.
Nate.
All right. So I'm kind of really with Tom, I think, here. It's like, I get it. And again, I'm not, a super numbers guy myself. I mean, obviously the model has changed over the years. It's not the old pay-per-view model that it was, or even, the closed circuit model it was before that and all that. I mean, things have certainly changed. So yes, revenue streams have changed and all that. I won't even pretend to know that, like I know what I'm talking about when it comes to all of that. But assuming that is all the case and everything, you've definitely got to kind of shift things around, I guess, to take care of that. And play to that. But at the same time, I agree with Tom. It's like, that's how wrestling's always been. You've got these shows that build to the big shows and build to that crescendo. And, I think that's kind of how, at least in my opinion, I feel like that's how wrestling works the best. When I would go to like the local shows, like in the area, before COVID, some of the local shows, it's just these, one-off shows. There's no real story or anything. They're fun. The either local talent, you might get a couple, bigger names on these shows or whatever, halfway decent stars or, notable stars, but like, it's just kind of a one-shot show. There's no real story or anything like that, which, like I said, they're fun, but like, you don't really get invested in it because, it's a one-time thing. Whereas, this is a weekly show. You want to have those stories, and those stories are obviously going to need to come to some sort of a head. And having them all come to a head at the same time, building that big show, I mean, that's obviously what's been that draw, what brings in all that money and has for years. Now, with the change here, especially now with Peacock, I have absolutely, it basically takes the whole book and throws it out the window in terms of how things used to be done. So I don't know what the right answer is here. As far as I'm concerned, I would like to see the bigger matches take place on the bigger shows, see them take place on the takeovers, because that's just how, and I hate to say like, it's how it's always been. That's how I want it to be. But, I just feel like that's the best way of doing things. Is you want to have your biggest matches on your big shows. Now, that's not to say, you can't have a championship match, every week. We have, I think at least probably 6, 7, 8 weeks running now, there's been a championship match, of some sort on NXT. So you can certainly do it and still make them feel important, especially with 6 championships. But I think that the general formula should either remain the same, or if it isn't going to remain the same, they drastically need to change the presentation on TV to reflect that. And if they did, then what would happen to the bigger shows too? What happens to your WrestleMania? If you're not building to WrestleMania and you're only building for TV, what happens to WrestleMania weekend? What happens to Royal Rumble weekend? Things like that. So I don't think those are ever going to necessarily go away. And I guess also to kind of play devil's advocate too, something like WrestleMania, that's going to be a big revenue builder just locally at the event. Not necessarily on TV. There's going to be a lot of money just involved there with, cause I mean, hell, now it's an entire weekend or a week even. So, once it can be an actual event, if the pandemic thing ever stops. I don't know. I've kind of harped on it a lot here, but I think at least the general way things are going should be, or the way that they've always been, kind of the way they should be, unless there is a complete drastic shift in the way that not only they do business, but then they present it to their audience. So, yeah.
Our last email is from Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. I just realized my Hulu was behind a bit, and when I looked at the clock, it was 9:15. That said, I'm certainly intrigued at how Mercedes Martinez fits into the larger Mei Ying story, and dare I say it, but I think LA Knight and the Million Dollar Man are a perfect fit. What do you make of Bobby Fish's return only to lose? And lastly, which of the recent NXT releases are you most surprised by? cough, cough, not Drake. Thanks, as always, for your time. Office hours are now over. The professor, Kevin P. Catani, Ph.D. Yeah, Bobby Fish returning only to lose was always going to happen. Like, he's not that big a deal. Without Undisputed Era, he's Bobby Fish. He'll do okay, and he has seen his best days. I don't know how Mercedes Martinez fits in. I think that she will be a somewhat upper-level gatekeeper. I would love to see her get a run with the title, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's more likely that she will be an upper-level gatekeeper, and would love to see her prove me wrong. What release am I most surprised by? I don't know that I'm surprised by any. In the last year, in the last half year, the only one that really surprises me is Billie Kay, because she was getting used in a fun role. She's funny, and she was fun to see on the show and is competent enough in the ring. And I think that was silly to get rid of somebody who is as entertaining as she is to make room for somebody who's probably not. Tom?
I guess I'm intrigued by the Mercedes Martinez thing as well. I'm mostly just like, yay, these people are on TV again, I hope. But Martinez, just where she's been positioned and where Chan Sha has been positioned, they feel very disparate on the card. So it feels like, of course, Mercedes is going to put someone over, right? But it does feel like it's a lower rung for Martinez to be working on. But still, I think it'll turn out well. I guess we covered the other stuff. The releases, I agree. I'm not surprised. I guess it's surprising. If there's one that I am most surprised by, it is Alexander Wolfe, just because it seemed like they were still in the middle of a story. And I was giving them the benefit of the doubt last Tuesday by saying, like, well, it's weird that they haven't told the story as to why this is culminating in a match. But, you know, Vic Joseph is paying that lip service. He's saying, we don't really know what's going on here. So clearly we're still in the middle of this. Then it became clear the next day when they released him that the reason they didn't tell a story is because they didn't want to bother coming up with one. So that's the surprising part of that. Alexander Wolfe getting released in and of itself is not a huge surprise, unfortunately. And neither were any of the other ones. To briefly mention the obvious ones of Dream and Wurtz, it's like, okay, they finally did what they had to do, but the damage was already done. I'm not even going to dig into that any further right now. The damage was already done. It already reflected poorly on the company. It already spread through the locker room in the ways it was going to. And, you know, so, they did what they had to do, but it was also too late. Also, just because we got a question last week about, oh, could Jessamyn Duke be in the Diamond Mine? I was going to say this, and then I just spaced it. I was going to say, like, I'm pretty sure that Jessamyn Duke said that she's done wrestling and she's just doing, like, focusing on video game streaming and stuff. And then next day, released. So there's that. But I will point out that I couldn't mention it as my biggest surprise, because going into the year of 2020, I put out this tweet of, like, you know, the kind of a self-important tweet, like, look at all the people who aren't on TV that I know about. But I was people that I was saying, like, okay, NXT kind of has to crap or get off the pot over the next calendar year with these people. And one of them was Kavita DeVee, someone who I like, and we've seen how she's been an ambassador for the company. And unfortunately, she's just been very hampered by injuries and personal issues. You know, family concerns that she's made public, but, you know, family stuff that's been going on that's been keeping her away from places where they've wanted to use her. And finally, they just cut bait. You know, it's just too bad because she just seemed like not only did she have potential, but she just came off like a very sweet, genuine person who loved what she was doing with the company, and it meant a lot to her. But now they've signed a bunch of other people from her same country that they probably feel can fill that ambassador role that she was filling. So it's just a bummer to see Kavita go.
That should have been mine, because when I read her name, I was stunned. Because they put a lot into her. Like, she was on one of the last Blood Money shows. She was really heavily featured. Was it a Blood Money show or was it? No, it wasn't. It was actually one of the shows that was in India, and I can't remember. It was one of the ones that was on early in the morning here, and she was supposed to be in that show and was, I think, the largest face on the poster, and they still did the segment, like the hype segment of hers that was supposed to happen, but the match didn't happen because that was when the personal family thing came up, and I don't know a lot about that and I won't speak on it, but yes, I was surprised because I remember hearing that, you know, she was doing record WWE numbers on YouTube.
But, yeah, her match with Dakota Kai. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Oh, man. Crazy. Nate.
All right. I don't know if I have a whole heck of a lot to add in terms of like Mercedes Martinez, Mei Ying stuff that Kevin brings up. Same thing with LA Knight, Million Dollar Man. I think we touched that pretty well. Same thing with Bobby Fish. Really, I think the biggest NXT release that I was probably surprised by, well, to be honest with you, I think it might have actually been Drake Wertz, because I didn't think they were ever getting rid of the guy. I didn't think that he could actually do anything to get himself fired. When I saw that video of him going to bat, it was a video of him at the student council telling everybody that kids shouldn't wear masks or they're going to get kidnapped and stuff. And he's wearing a shirt with an NXT logo on it, and he wasn't fired that day. I didn't think that he would ever get fired. So I was surprised to see the name. I was very glad to see the name. But I guess this kind of even goes into what Tom says, is like the damage had been done. You know, it makes a company look bad. And I didn't think the company was going to do the right thing, get rid of him. I think that might have been my biggest surprise, because I did not have the faith in the company that they were actually going to get rid of him for his extremist views and things like that. Plus, there is a part of me that also says, just because it's somebody has extremist views, doesn't, as long as they don't bring it into the workplace, I guess technically, I, much as I don't like it, you have the right to do that in this country, so whatever. But that being said, he did bring it into work, so there's that. And as well as tout it wearing an NXT shirt. So in terms of wrestlers, yeah, Kavita V was it's definitely one for what you guys mentioned. Alexander Wolf, I think, was a little bit – I wouldn't say it was a surprise per se, because, I mean, it's Alexander Wolf, you know, it's not like he was really moving the needle much, but where he was kicked out of Imperium last week, I thought maybe they were going to do something with that. So I was kind of surprised at, you know, I mean, I guess that's why he got kicked out of Imperium, so they're going to get rid of him. But I was kind of expecting them to do something with it. Maybe, you know, maybe some sort of like a sanity, you know, revival, or, you know, with like Killian Dane and Nikki Cross or something. It was kind of what was going through my head. So it was kind of, I was a little surprised to see him get released, simply because he was, you know, I thought they were going to do something there. But other than that, I think I'll wrap it up there and stop flapping my gums.
So there you go, folks. That is our show. And yeah, I wasn't surprised by Drake at all. I just thought that they might feel like they had to wait for a round of cuts, because it could be interpreted as a statement if they fired him without anybody else. When I saw that they fired another referee at the same time, I'm so cynical that I thought they needed to get rid of another referee to justify getting rid of this referee, even though he had a hugely deleterious effect on their company and was, your views, if they're poisoning, his views made them less likely to be able to put on their show because he was bringing, potentially, he was going to super spreader events. He should have been gone already.
And emboldening other people in the locker room who leaned his way.
Yeah.
And of course, he's got people wearing polo shirts, not suits, but polo shirts that back him up on those sorts of things. So that was a contingent as well. But yeah, man, it went from knowing that this was a thing and not really wanting to bring it up on the podcast, but wondering if bringing it up was the responsible thing to do, to getting to a point where now the whole wrestling world knows about it, and the dude just legitimately terrifies me. Like, I feel something when he speaks, you know, when you watch that Seminole County rant that he went on, it terrifies me in ways that I feel in my core when I see movies about Charles Manson or something like that. It's just freaky human being shit, and, you know, he's got other people in NXT as basically like followers, you know, it's cut that off, but you know, they kept him around and severed him when it was convenient, I guess, like you're saying, Kelly. So yeah.
Yep. Cried about stuff that's not real. What are you? Okay. So that is our show. Sorry, Dan is on the downer, but that's going to happen. And, thankfully we don't have to talk about it more. So for Tom, your lunatic fringe, I am your tribal chief. And Nate is the architect of the shield.
I was going to say I was Doink the Clown, but hey,
how have you been planning that since?
I write that shit down the second he says it, and I know how I'm going to end the show. 515-605-9345, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or SpookyMilk.games, Tom.
At Tom Staup, go VIP for NXT 8 years back. The movie subject this week is favorite documentaries.
No, I already said Tom.
Nate, at Nate Lindberg on Twitter. I do the hits and misses for NXT, which is already up on pwtorch.com because I'm one step ahead of myself this week. I'll be doing the SmackDown All Perspective Report on Friday. And at some point in the next week or so, Frank Pettiani and I are going to be recording an episode of WWE Then and Now on WrestleMania X8. So we're going to be talking like Rock and Hogan and stuff, which is going to be awesome. It'll be dropping on VIP, I think, in probably like 2 or 3 weeks. So check that out when it does.
All right. And that is it. Sorry we eclipsed 2 hours, but y'all were just too damn interesting. So we will see you in 7, folks. Cheers.